This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Bismarck. No, was it Bismarck? Was it
Bismarck?
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck, yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
There's a monster in my pants, and it does a naughty dance. When it sees the light of day, you can hear the people say,
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening. And it's a little chilly in the air, Scott, as we head towards Halloween and Thanksgiving and Christmas and the snow and everything else will be upon us very soon. But here tonight, it feels like summertime as we're heading back to July of 2003. Isn't that right, PIC?
That is, and good evening.
Excuse me, night of the year.
That's right. PWI match of the wrestler of the year. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And Armento won worst worked match. So just no. JR, always a pleasure. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 340 of The Mothership. And I'm believe it or not, as much as we all love, you know, summer and temperate conditions, kind of digging the chilly weather. You know, coming close to, as you said, Halloween, of course. And we'll have a big story about that later on for Wednesday. And then, of course, Thanksgiving around the corner. I always see you Thanksgiving time. And then we head into Christmas. So I get pumped when there's a little chill in the air. So, and it was kind of weird being like 72 the first week of October.
Yeah, I was not complaining strange. About that.
Well, really I guess not. I guess not. For somebody with perpetual allergies, I suppose
that doesn't matter. I have them regardless.
Yeah, that's true. As everyone saw on Facebook, very humbling weekend for myself. But you, my friend, had a very fun weekend. You hung out with the silverback on Saturday, I imagine.
Not dressed like a gorilla for Halloween. It was a little...
He was not dressed like a silverback, though.
A little sad. Yes. He was dressed like the Hurricane, though. Hurricane Helms, that is. So
ah, yes, he was.
But dusted out that old shirt. So that was fun. We were there for that party, and we had a good time.
Yes, I heard you had a blast. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to say, did the shirt still fit him? But then again, I think he's always perpetually worn 4XL shirts.
Yes, so I think that way he'll grow into him without a problem.
Yes. So, well, I'm glad everyone. Hope everyone else had a wonderful weekend. It was a entertaining sports weekend. A lot of football, and of course, you'll check out the Extra Point, which went up this morning on the website. And of course, later in the week, we'll have the Sports Lounge. So, football in full force. And then, of course, tomorrow night is Game 1. Of the World Series in Kansas City. Kind of weird to think, huh? All those years in the 90s that your dynasty beat the Royals up, and now here they are.
We'll see. I mean, I'm on record. I hope I'm wrong because I'm rooting for the Royals. I'm on record comparing them to those 07 Rockies, who Scott, I confirmed, swept their way through the playoffs and also won a play-in game. So they've pretty much mirrored what the Royals have done. And they ran into a more playoff-tested, veteran-laden team in the Boston Red Sox in 2007. So we'll see if the Giants can play that role. here.
You were mentioned, actually. I referred to you a couple times, not to tip our hats. I want everyone to listen to the Extra Point this week. But when we had Joel Barnhart on, I did kind of refer to you and that analogy. But we will officially say that all three of us, Dr. G and I picked the Royals, and I believe Joel picked the Giants. I picked the Royals in six. I think the Royals have to win the first two at home. If the Giants steal one early, I think the Royals may not make it back to Kansas City.
But especially game one. Yeah. I feel like if the Giants come in and win game one, everyone's going to kind of be like, oh, well, here we go. The run's over. They were hot. And I feel like if they get off to game one and then they kind of keep that momentum rolling, they may be in better shape.
But, yeah, I think so, too. So.
For another show. So, yes, Scott, yes. We head deep inside the Vintage Vault tonight.
Yes, the big steel box for the first Blue Brand show, and a show that you and I have actually really been looking forward to doing because it's one of yours and my personal favorites. So, Mr. Sutton said that the box
is... Hey, what is going on here?
Well, at least he said he cleaned the nacho cheese, and he did. Tonight... Oh, you've been waiting to do this, haven't you? Tonight, oof. Inside the Vintage Vault.
Oh, boy. I can't even handle it. I'm so excited.
I don't even want to read what the usual tagline, because I'm going to say that we are on a stage.
Get the full effect of this one.
That's right, full effect. Yeah.
Ever since I was a little boy.
Ever since I was a little girl.
Since I can remember.
All my life, I've wanted this.
This was my reason to live. So I worked hard.
I did whatever I could.
I did what I had to.
I risked my life because I had the drive.
The determination.
The desire.
To succeed.
To be a champion.
To live out a dream.
Nothing could stop me.
Tonight.
If I push harder.
Ignore the pain. Focus on this goal. Justify all the hard work
and prove to myself I was right.
No one will stand in my way.
Tonight is my chance,
my opportunity
to prove to myself
beyond a shadow of a doubt
that I've made a difference.
This is my call,
that I am the real deal.
Tonight is about control. Everything is about control. Tonight, I will maintain control with the Big Show, with Sable, with me. I am the Dream Killer, the Reaper of Souls, the Master Puppeteer on the stage, you fools. I am the only one who can see the big picture, the grand design. So take your bleeding heart somewhere else. Take your freak friend Gimp with you. There's no room for either of you here. This isn't a charity house. This isn't a key club or an old age home. This is a company. This is my business. This is my life. I say what and who goes. I am the master of this house. I pull the strings around here. So I don't care who the hell you are. If you're in my way, you will get taken out.
Take your freak Gimp friend with you.
I almost thought the Master Puppeteer in the Stage of Fools was the greatest line ever, but I think that one's even better.
Freak Gimp.
Take your freaky Gimp with you.
Sable, the Big Show, and me.
Me.
Mark Clare, I'm sure we'll remember that. So we rewatched that promo over and over. The highlight beyond the talking is the sped up walking with the cane around the circle in the ring.
Yes, yes.
While he's ranting.
What a piece of trash.
just an epic promo. One of my favorites of all time.
Yes.
Classic opening video.
Absolutely. For tonight, out of the big steel box known as the Vintage Vault, we bring you Vengeance 2003. The first show solo for SmackDown.
And a good Blue chance for them premiere. To really take over the race. You know, I think we should track that month by month here. Kind of like, maybe do like a, you want to do like a thumbs up? You want to keep track of your little pad
yes.
over there?
I shall.
You just want to give like a, I don't know, how should we do it? Just a check mark?
Yeah, we'll do a thumbs up, thumbs down, okay. Or arrow up, arrow down.
All right, we'll see how
for
many.
Whether, and we could do a middle, like a draw, if the show, or should, does it need to be definitive, up, down?
Let's go up, down. Okay. I think we'll get tepid and start putting them all in the middle.
Yeah, that's true. So we would have to
down for Bad Blood.
Yeah, Bad Blood is definitely down. I mean, the Hell in a Cell was not bad. But
so over the next few years, we'll see how many ups and downs each of these brands have.
Yes.
So this is really their chance to take over the race. All they're going to do is beat Bad Blood.
I thought they really were pushing Vince's power struggle with Steph on SmackDown. We'll talk about that as we go.
Yep.
And did you feel this, Scott, that SmackDown shows, both TV and pay-per-view, had a weird, different, unique energy?
Yes.
Than Raw? Like, it was louder, faster, upbeat. I don't know. It just felt completely different. Raw felt very, for being live and for having the more, like, bombastic personalities, Raw felt more, just slower.
Mm-hmm.
And SmackDown felt, like, very frenetic. Like, the pace was crazy.
I'll tell you this. To compare it to type of movies, Raw felt like a very long drama.
Right.
Which had a lot of twists and turns, but went at a very deliberate pace, telling your stories. And you're dealing with a roster that, for the most part, except for, you know, some certain guys, Shawn and Jericho, move pretty slow. SmackDown is like an action film, like Fast and Furious. It's got great characters. Maybe you don't know a lot about them, but boy, do they entertain you. And they go at a frenetic, breakneck pace.
Yeah, the energy is just like off the chart. Like, even I think it goes down to Cole and Tad. Like, everything, they feel like young and fresh on SmackDown, even though some of the guys aren't.
Yeah,
this whole show has a very unique, special energy that it almost felt like they were coming out with that goal in mind to beat Raw in their first outing.
I also feel like the venue helped in that as well.
Oh yeah,
because we're in a place that we've never been to before, and I think that helped. That, you know, wow, this is this place's first pay per view. Whereas Bad Blood, I mean, it was like what, Houston's like fifth pay per view, you know, and they go there a lot. So
I mean, do you think the card had to do with it for Bad Blood though, a little bit? I mean, if they had this card.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, they did get. I think that they had expectations of their matches, and they didn't quite deliver. I think, and we talked about it a lot in the last vault. I think the disappointment of Shawn and Flair really kind of killed the buzz of that show. I think they knew Triple H and Nash would be about as good as you were going to expect. They knew Goldberg and Jericho was going to be okay, and it ended up being a little bit better than they anticipated. But I think really the expectations of Shawn and Flair, really gave that show its own energy, and then when it didn't deliver, it kind of lost its buzz. So, looking at this card and looking at who's on the card and who's facing who, I don't think you were expecting a stinker. Considering who the matchups were, and we'll obviously go into them. But I don't think anybody was going in thinking, "Wow, this show's got a possibility of really sucking." I don't think anybody saw that when they looked at this card. Whereas Bad Blood, you're like, "Oh, Sean Flair's good, but the rest of this is not going to be that great." And it was okay, but Sean Flair was supposed to be the match of all matches, and it wasn't. And I think that's what killed the buzz of Houston.
Speaking of buzz, that leads us to our crowd, our next crowd.
Yes, this crowd. Yes, very much so. Although back then it wasn't legal. July 27th, 2003. Live from the Pepsi Center. Indeed. In Denver, Colorado. Because there is two Pepsi places. There's the Pepsi Arena in Albany at the time. It's now called something else.
It's more like the Pepsi and Ringdings Arena.
That's right. And pork rinds.
You want me to talk about it? Is that where we're at?
No, just listening to the song.
Okay.
I'm just enjoying the
Brook Road in November 20th, 1997. Opened October 1st, 99. Cost about $1.87 in the $1 million range. HOK Sports was the architect. The Tenants, Denver Nuggets, 99 to the present. The Colorado Avalanche, 99 to the present as well. As the Colorado Mammoth from 2003 to the present, the NLL. Mm-hmm. Colorado Crush of the AFL played there for five years.
Yes,
not Axe or Smash. Democratic National Convention was there for a year, and the MWC Conference Tournament was there for a couple of years
West
as well.
Conference. Yes. Yep. Nice building. If you look at the front, it's really a nice arena. It's very nice.
For the 08 DNC, they installed a backup generator that had the capacity to power the entire city of Pueblo, Colorado.
Wow.
12 miles of optical fiber cables were installed.
Wow. Crazy. I thought it was just so people could plug in their electric cigarettes or other such devices. I don't know. Maybe the show was not as good because everybody was... These guys don't look like who they are. No.
I'll tell you, they were pretty awake for that crowd. But no, you're right. Yes. This is well before that.
Yes. Your attendance, 9,500. I believe the capacity, I believe you said, JR, the capacity is 19,000. So they obviously shortened the arena for this. Right. Your buy rate is 0.69, and your announcers, for the first time, uninterrupted.
Flying solo.
Michael Cole and Taz. And because some of these secondary shows, you know, some of these shows so far where they've gone, you know, where both brands have been on, we get a really good Michael Cole Taz match, and then we get kind of a JR Jerry stinker, and it kind of even kills the announcing buzz. But now Cole and Taz are solo, beginning to end for the first time.
Yep. So.
All right. Before we delve in, what do we have in the Sutton Report as we head into Denver?
All right. The Sutton Report, a vengeance sponsored by Eidos Interactive. Price
yes,
to
was.
Pay by Stained. Yep. Thank God, no more Headstrong. And we'll take a moment here. Stephen Sutton advocating on behalf of Travis Aid, of course, the wrestler who's undergoing cancer, Chris Travis. And as of 10 p.m. British time, whatever the hell, Greenwich Mean Time, is that where he is?
I'm guessing so.
Over $4,000 so far has been raised. So still time to donate at Indiegogo.com/project/ I've been, won't do many hits with the bug. Trav.a.the/Trav-A-the-Chris-Travis-Cancer-Fight-Fund. Go there and donate today.
I think we have a new open.
More like hash.
On a trivia note, JR, just to expand, do you know what game Eidos Interactive was pimping on this night?
It was some stupid Warlock game or something, wasn't it?
Nope. Tomb Raider, the Angel of Darkness.
There you go.
Was the game that night.
I like Warlocks better.
Yeah, I like Warlocks too.
All right. Sutton gives us our championship roll call, SmackDown only. WWE champion Brock Lesnar. We have a new belt that we'll talk about shortly.
Yes.
The tag team champions are still Shelton Benjamin. Oh, I'm sorry, recrowned Shelton Benjamin, Charlie Haas, now known as the world's greatest tag team.
Yes.
Had regained their titles from Eddie Guerrero and Tajiri on the July 1st SmackDown from Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
Rey Mysterio has regained the Cruiserweight title, defeated Matt Hardy on the June 3rd SmackDown from Anaheim. Got a huge hometown pop for that win.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool moment for that one, and a really cool idea that first showed the immediate benefit of spacing these shows out and having the brand specific pay-per-views. If you remember, mm-hmm. they did a lot of like big episodes of the TV shows.
Yes.
So I remember that was like a heavily hyped one, Ray versus Matt. They would hype them like 2 or 3 weeks out that they were coming. So we've had a lot of TV returns, a lot of different debuts that we can cover as we move along here as well. And we'll talk a little bit about the history of one of our belts. On Sunday Night Heat, we had... pull that up over here. One match, and there's the Ultimo Dragon, former WCW stalwart. We'll talk about him. Mm-hmm. Defeats Canyon, still bumming around. But I believe this is the final time we talk about him.
Well, he is in a match later.
Right.
So, but this will be the last evening for him in WCW. And they did a lot of stuff in Denver. I think they did a pay-per-view in Colorado, I believe. 99 maybe or something. I just can't get over the building. It's nice to be. And this will be, JR, I was mentioning this to you earlier. This is the first of three consecutive new arenas that will be debuting in the next few vaults. Two new states. So a new state tonight. We've never been in Colorado. And our next vault, a brand new state as well.
Mm-hmm.
So some new places in 2003. Kind of like 95, where we had like, you know, Winnipeg and
hopefully it ends a little bit better than 95.
Yes, that's true. And the hell was the place? Where was the Michigan place? Saginaw and all those weird places. We got kind of funky places in 2003 as well. All right. Let's dive into our first match, which is a title match. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, JR, on the report, a new belt. Why don't you let us know what that new belt is?
The United States Championship, Scott. That old WCW belt we saw a little bit during the invasion. Mm-hmm. With the IC title now on Raw, there needed to be a secondary title on SmackDown, so Stephanie McMahon brought back the belt, which had vanished at Survivor Series 01 when it merged with the IC title when Edge defeated Test.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the tournament results that led to this final. Chris Benoit defeated Rhino, Matt Hardy defeated Rikishi, Billy Gunn defeated John Cena, and Eddie Guerrero defeated the Ultimo Dragon. In the semifinals, Chris Benoit defeated Matt Hardy, and Eddie Guerrero defeated Billy Gunn, and that brought us to the finals here. So, here's a few fun facts about the U.S. title. The first champion, do you know?
I know. Yes, Harley Race.
Correct. Won mm-hmm. a national tournament.
Yep.
Tallahassee, 1975.
That's a real tournament, by the way. This isn't like Egypt or Rio. That was actually a real tournament.
Do you know who had the longest individual reign?
Lex Luger?
Rick Rude, 419 days.
Ah, yes. I'm in the midst of that. Well, I was. He won it at, Let me think. Right before, I think it was right after Halloween Havoc 91, and I think he kept it to like early 93 when him and Dustin started their feud. Yeah, okay, I can see that.
Longest reign combined.
That's Lex Luger.
Yes, 948 total days.
Yeah.
Yep. Shortest reign.
Jim Duggan? No, that was the TV title.
Jim Duggan was involved in this reign.
Oh, of course. Steve Austin at Fall Brawl 95.
5 minutes.
Yep.
Poor most guy. Reigns as U.S. champion.
Luger, five, right?
Ric five Flair with six.
Oh, Flair, okay.
Last holder had been Edge. Had been active before it got deactivated for 26 years, 10 months, 18 days, and now been inactive for about a year and 8 months. So U.S. title back in the fold, and you can't really beat the guys they picked here.
Absolutely not.
Because it had a little WCW flavor with the guys, and of course it was going to be a great match. So I thought it made perfect sense to create the mid-card SmackDown title, fill that pay-per-view and TV space, like we talked about on Raw. Great choice for the final and the opener. Kick it off with a hot work rate match to really kind of establish what SmackDown can do that Raw can't. They can't have a match like this right now. Think of the opener, Bad Blood. It was, Chris Nowinski and Rodney Mack against the Dudleys.
Yes.
Hot match crowd-wise, but not even close. It was a competitive tournament overall and a very fitting final. So basic back and forth early. The crowd was much more into this than back at Armageddon 02. Remember that, Scott? We talked about these two going at it.
Oh, yeah.
And that crowd was kind of silent here. They're rocking. Stories of a lot of counters because they're evenly matched. They know each other so well. Benoit goes all out to gain the advantage and starts targeting Eddie's shoulder. The crowd is mainly backing Benoit with just a smattering of Eddie support. Eddie goes after the neck and back. Cole does a good job putting over the history of the U.S. title. Good suplex battle. We get the Germans versus the Three Amigos. Good Benoit near fall on a powerbomb with the ref. And then we get a ref bump, which I thought felt a little forced. It came off a really good battle over the crossface when Benoit was trying to hook it and Eddie fought out of it. And then it kind of felt like, all right, did we really need that there? And then that led to another great near fall, though, off a belt shot and a frog splash from Eddie. And then you get some classic Eddie cheating where he just bashes the ref in the back of the head with the belt and then plays dead and tries to blame Benoit. Like, he's popping up his head and checking on the ref. Benoit gets a visual tap out with the crossface. And then we get a better ref bump later when Benoit goes to the headbutt off the top and Eddie pulls the ref in the way. A better ref bump in the idea of a ref bump, but not fun to watch Benoit take that impact as it goes flying off. Rhino comes out. You think he's going to help his tag team partner, Benoit, but we get a heel turn, a swerve, and Eddie wins once again by cheating. Normally, I'm not a fan of these interference finishes, but I thought it worked here because I thought Rhino turn helped Benoit stay strong in this match. He didn't lose clean. I thought it fit Eddie's style. So it didn't really feel like a cheap ending because that was just his style, was to cheat. And I thought it was a great opener overall and a classic match to start this show.
Oh, one of the greatest. I mean, you could put this in the pantheon of greatest pay-per-view openers. I mean, is it Bret Owen? Not quite, but very close. Certainly very close. Similar kind of match, similar two guys. And you were talking about Raw openers. Honestly, the only two really active guys on the Raw roster that could compete with this, we already saw that match at WrestleMania. That's Shawn and Jericho, really. Nobody else in the main roster can really work like these guys can. This felt very WCW-ish. I feel like they harkened back to like 96, even 95 through like 97 when that mid-card was really cooking for WCW. I felt like the match was a lot like this. And that's, I think, made this match special. And the crowd, I think, dug it for that reason. It almost seemed very un-WWE-like. And I think people dug that. And I think that's why this show has that special feel. And this crowd is just totally geeked. It's a shame that they haven't gone. Well, there's reasons why they don't go back to Denver. We'll document that in a few years. But they really just brought the goods. And counter moves sometimes feel wasted just to kind of extend matches. But this match reminded me a lot of like the Eddie Dean matches in ECW. Just very counter maneuver and trying to outsmart the other guy. And it was just really well put together. They really put together a nice story. And, don't forget, the logic of the Rhino heel turn was Benoit did beat him in the first round of the tournament. So there was a little background on that anyway.
Yes, yep.
So I had no problem with it. I agree with you. Sometimes they're just like so half-assed. And are they predictable? Yeah. I mean, when you have two guys, you know, kind of both out of it, and then one guy gets in expected to hit one, you know he's going to hit the other. So, but I agree with you that it makes Benoit still look like a badass, and he still had to take a frog splash for it.
And the only worry you get is that they're going to transition him to a feud with Rhino, and you kind of hope that it's going to stay at that level of the U.S. title and not just that Eddie's going to move on and Benoit's going to go feud with Rhino now. Because that would feel like a step down for what Benoit's been through this year.
I agree.
So you kind of hope that, all right, they're just kind of balancing the ledger in this division. Not that he's going to feud with Rhino on his own. And we'll find out next month where that goes.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But, I mean, it's just an incredible match. It's an incredible opener. And already you feel that SmackDown's got this sparkle to it.
Oh, yeah.
That Raw really doesn't. Even with, you know, like Austin and all this, it just doesn't have that same something. Maybe it's because it's fresh. Maybe because we're having these, you know, newer, fresher guys and, you know, even the main event's more athletic. I think that's what I think the key to it is of this roster is just there's so much more athletic. And this match just proves that. And I was kind of bummed. I was hoping Benoit would win when I remember watching it the first time. But watching it today just made me realize there was no losers in this match. I know it sounds cliche, but in a lot of instances, it's just amazing how these two know each other so well and told a great story. So Eddie Guerrero is your inaugural in WWE United States heavyweight champion, although they just say the U.S. champion. But it's nice to have that belt on SmackDown because considering what the mid-card is right now, it's not too bad having a belt float around in the middle.
Oh, definitely not.
So there you go. Now, we get a segment backstage, which continues to show Vince's just utter sleaziness, where he's sitting there smelling. Doesn't he just look like such a scumbag?
Yeah, he is.
Even the way he's smelling the rose, it's like such a just.
And even the look he had during the stretch with the always had like the collar shirt unbuttoned, like one extra button too much. So you could see his chest.
Yes, looking like some guy at a freaking bar or something. It's so trashy. And he's gives Stephanie some grief. Stephanie walks in. Stephanie's, I have to say, 2002, 2003. I know Stephanie was. Everyone loved the cutie Stephanie in 99, and then how she matured a bit in 2000. But in terms of just utter just prettiness, her 02, 03 stretch is pretty tough to beat.
Bother me.
See, I like the bangs. I don't have a problem with that.
That's why I don't like this version.
See, I like the bangs. Those go away eventually, but I do like the bangs. And I think she highlighted her hair a bit. It's a little more brown because usually it's pretty dark. But any event, he's giving Stephanie guff, and he's like, oh, these flowers aren't for you. These are sables, which... You know,
and me,
and he gives her these are plastic flowers from your mother's thing, and he's just such a fucking piece of trash. All right, next up, speaking of piece of trash, this stupid storyline. Get into this because this is just, how did we get to this point with this utter nonsense?
I'll tell you how we got to it. So this. The storyline. All right. So Tori had been feuding on and off with Nydia and Jamie Noble, but by early June, she found a new partner and a boyfriend to help her battle, and that is Billy Gunn.
What?
Hang on. On the 6-9 SmackDown, Gunn defeated Noble in a singles match. A week later, Noble and Nydia were told that Noble's late aunt had left them an inheritance of $827,000. On the 7-10 SmackDown, Gunn and Tori defeated Noble and Nydia in a tag match. After the bout, Noble offered Tori $10,000 to sleep with him. She immediately quit from Desire and said, yeah, all right, I'd do that anyway. An offended Gunn attacked Noble and left him taken out. A week later, Noble upped the ante to $25,000, but ended up losing a match to Ultimo Dragon when Tori and Gunn distracted him. Later that night, Noble helped Eddie Guerrero beat Gunn in a U.S. title tournament semifinal match. And the next week, Gunn defeated Noble in a singles match, but after the bout, Noble asked for a rematch with a special stipulation. If he won, he got to spend the night with Tori. Billy was offended, but Tori accepted, assuming there was no way Noble would beat Gunn. Now, Scott,
we have to adjust that, because after watching it today, Tori actually offered the stipulation.
How stupid. So,
what was she on?
My issue here, right? So, I mean... You act like Billy Gunn's the fucking Rock, first of all.
And, I know, Jesus.
And Jamie Noble's Dwayne Gill. I mean, Gunn hasn't won a singles match in how long that means anything. And, I mean, you get off for 25 grand. It's like a 50-50 shot you're going to have to sleep with this guy for no money. Take the cash.
You know? Who says it's got to be an hour? You get a quickie. She probably is good at faking it. Just go with it.
You know?
But anyway.
And even worse, even worse, is that Tori's supposed to be attracted to this bloated, balding, gross Billy Gunn. Like, I mean,
terrible
come
hair.
On. Ugh, awful hair, all gassed up.
Yeah.
Like, just, I mean, come on. Tori's a goddess. She's dating this schlub.
Yeah. Such a mess.
Ugh.
She was easily my favorite diva in this in this stretch, too. But, oh, my God.
It's absurd.
All people. Ugh, really.
Weird feud, story snip. So Tori's bouncing from guy to guy. Ends up a gun, as we said. Noble plays a great rich pervert, I thought, with a sex briefcase with all the toys in it.
And his crinkled Playboy.
Billy Gunn is aimless in the mid-card, back with the Mr. Ass gimmick. Noble works the leg after his knee buckled on the floor while trying to catch a diving Noble. Billy Gunn. I'm sorry. Well, Billy Gunn was trying to catch a diving Noble. He hurt his leg, and then Jamie Noble worked the leg. Nitty was at ringside, as we mentioned, the story is that she's pissed at Noble for trying to bang Tori with her money. Decent Billy selling. He can't get the Famouser off due to the knee. Gets a nice diamond cutter, which I thought looks pretty good. Nidia helps Billy Gunn. Noble kisses Tori, but then gets smacked by both tomatoes, Cole! as Taz called them, the tomatoes.
Yep. The tomatoes.
Tepid roll-up finish that came off awful. Billy barely even collided with Tori. And then I thought the highlight of the match is Tori's look of shock as she's just standing there while Noble celebrates like he won the world title, which he probably basically did.
Yeah.
I thought the story was actually kind of fun, even though it made zero sense across the board. But the match is nothing. Billy just doesn't fit. I thought this whole thing would have made more sense if they had a better, like if Kidman was in the spot where he's like at least believable that Tori would be banging him, you know?
Because she was.
Right.
Yeah.
But then he's a younger, decent looking guy. I mean, Billy Gunn's like, it's just unbelievable. She's supposed to be dating this 50-year-old bald guy with, you know, just, it was like when they used to put the diamond doll with, you know, old ass ugly Ed Leslie and Buddha's Beefcake and yes. Booty Man in 96 and WCW. It was like the most unbelievable pairing ever. It's just,
yeah.
I mean, Noble's better looking guy than Billy Gunn, you know?
Unbelievable. And the match is crap. So it's really not much to go on.
Yeah, really pretty much the only down spot of this whole, of this whole show. So
just absolutely dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. There's not much more to say about it. Jamie Noble wins and we'll expound on this storyline. Further on down the line. All right. You got your own issues. Why don't you button, take your shirt down a little lower, weirdo. Was there any backstage before the next match? I'm trying to remember. I don't think so.
No.
No. Okay. So next up, we have...
nothing important. I think there's an interview in there, but...
Yeah. Next up, we have a...
A lot.
Slightly fun, gimmicky thing.
A lot going on.
That's kind of a mess. But we got a lot of debuts here, and why don't you dive in, JR, and get us set up for this hot mess.
All right, we got a lot going on. So this is the APA Invitational Barroom Brawl. it's just a bar fight in a bar set up, a fake bar set up by the ring entranceway. Here are the participants, many of whom we've never talked about, but we will. Danny Basham and Doug Basham, the Brooklyn Brawler, Brother Love, Matt Capitelli, the Conquistadors, portrayed by Rob Conway and Johnny Jeter here. Doink the Clown, portrayed by Nick Dinsmore. The Easter Bunny, portrayed by Aaron Stevens. Funaki, Matt Hardy, John Hennigan, Orlando Jordan, Canyon, Shannon Moore, Nunzio, Sean O'Hare, Chuck Palumbo, Ron Simmons, Spanky, Johnny Stamboli, and Bradshaw. So we had a lot of debuts, like we said. We'll go through them. Danny Basham began training in 1998, was trained by his tag team partner Doug Basham, Danny Davis, and Jim Cornette, debuted in 1998 in Jefferson, Indiana, former three-time Ohio Valley heavyweight champion, former two-time Ohio Valley Southern tag team champion. His tag team partner now is Doug Basham, was trained by Danny Davis and Jim Cornette, began training in 1993, debuted in 1994, former member of the Revolution faction in OVW. He originally had hair, shaved it off. It would begin teaming with Danny Basham as they came up to the main roster. Now, it was one of them was the Damager. That was Danny, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So Doug was a big fan favorite in Ohio Valley.
Yeah.
And they debuted as a
champion a few times.
Yep. And they debuted as a team here on 523 on SmackDown for the Blue Brand. Matt Capitelli and John Hennigan were the co-winners of Tough Enough 3, mm-hmm. and really the most promising members of Tough Enough so far. Like, we've seen a couple, Maven and whatnot, but Matt Capitelli and John Hennigan, the co-winners here, were the ones that really seemed to have, like they finally figured it out on Tough Enough.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
two guys that we'll see, or at least one guy we'll see a lot of. Who else do we have that's new here? Rob Conway and Johnny Jeter, two more OVW students. We'll see more of them in the future. Orlando mm-hmm. Jordan had debuted in the 521 Velocity, another new face as well. And we mentioned Nick Dinsmore portraying Doink, began training in 1997 with Dean Malenko, debuted as in a handicap match, an eight-time OVW heavyweight champion. So mm-hmm. a lot of success down in Ohio Valley. We'll see more of him as well. So that's pretty much it, I think, for the names. So we'll cover more of them as we move along.
Mm-hmm.
We should also mention that Aaron Stevens, of course, was... well, actually, you know, Sutton has it as Sean Evans as the Easter Bunny, so I don't know if it was Aaron Stevens. If it was Aaron Stevens, that is, of course, today's Damon Sandow,
mm-hmm.
former wrestler of John Walters.
Yes. I could. I think it is.
I don't know. We'll have to look
I don't know either.
If we can figure, I don't know if Wiki has it. I don't have it there. So, also, after the brief single run, Bradshaw and Farouk reunited in OVW, winning the OVW Southern Tag Team Championship on April 10th. They vacated the titles when they returned to WWE television on June 19th. They assisted The Undertaker in an ambush from the FBI. They revived the former gimmick of beer-drinking and card-playing and decided to hold this barroom brawl on pay-per-view, handed out invitations to a very eclectic group of people. So I thought it was an interesting mix of young, old, and cartoony stars. I thought the concept was fine, how they had to be invitation-only.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Spanky was funny, dancing on the bar drunk during the entrances. Very random, Easter Bunny and Doink.
Yes.
Matt Hardy, still awesome. Brother Love cameo, I thought he looked identical. Exactly the same as the other.
Yes,
did.
Pretty much, yeah.
Final appearance for O'Hare and Canyon, both late of this world about now at the time that we're recording this.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about both of them previously, but this is it for them. Mm-hmm. Bradshaw now short blonde hair, and that was really due to a lot of the public appearances he was doing, both for the company and for financial TV. He started to really become known for his maneuvering in the stock market, had been doing very well for himself, started landing spots on CNBC and eventually Fox News. Was it Fox News or MSNBC? A couple of those stations.
It was on MSNBC first, and then he went to Fox News, yeah.
Right, and then he had a book come out for mm-hmm. financial advice, so he cut his hair, cut the long black hair, and a more presentable look for TV. I thought it was funny Brother Love did an opening benediction prayer to start the match. Solid mm-hmm. brawling with stiff weapon shots. Sean O'Hare actually looked pretty strong throughout. Funaki's just sitting at the bar drinking. Funny seeing the brawler out there, but it was a pretty fitting. If you're ever going to bring him back, that's what it's for.
Yeah, pretty much.
Matt Hardy, it's a leg drop off the bar through a table. Funaki just passes out, and then we get one last knockout of Brother Love. He's the last one to go down. The APA win. Fun and quick brawl, unique. And I didn't mind this. It was like less than 5 minutes, so it was fine.
Yeah.
Much better than our previous match.
Yes. And according to Wiki, it was Damian Sandow. Was
okay, yeah.
That's according to Wiki. So, yeah, I mean, there's no harm in this. We just get, you know, you see a bunch of guys you probably never heard of or saw before. So, you know, it's nothing offensive. Yeah, I mean, there was some pretty stiff shots, though. Heath, Bradshaw throws the aforementioned Easter Bunny pretty much all over the place. Throws him through an armoire, through a mirror. I mean, he gets the hell kicked out of him. But, yeah, I mean, nothing really more to get into. It's just a fun little brawl, although I will say that Bradshaw did seem out of place. He had this, like, you know, bouffant blonde hair to go with this black jeans and, you know, boots, and he's got this poofy hair. It was really weird, but we would see that Bradshaw would graduate, if you will, from this. So it's a little kind of a change of pace from his character anyway, but and it looked a little weird. Otherwise, nothing really much more to say. Bradshaw wins it. APA looks strong. I don't know if, were you getting the feeling that the APA was like reuniting, like in a tag team sense? And
yeah, definitely. I mean, that's how
were
they
you in favor
off.
Of it?
No, but at least they don't feel as stale as they did a year ago. I mean, at least the break has helped them a little bit, but it felt like a waste of Bradshaw. Someone they seemed to have really high hopes for, and it kind of seemed like, oh, maybe it's never going to happen for him.
Yes. Yeah. So there you go. Bradshaw wins the barroom brawl, but it was nice to see some characters come back and a bunch of useless guys getting thrown around. So it was fun. All right, next up, our next title match of the evening. This for the blue tags, otherwise known as the WWE tag team titles. Your champions, as JR mentioned, a team that would eventually become one of your favorites, my friend. And the former Team Angle.
Actually, before we get to that, we head backstage for a really quick segment where Noble is creeping
over.
He's
reading his crinkled, his crinkled Playboy.
Yeah, very creepy. And then a stagehand asks him on Nydia, and he gets all pissed off. But I just liked him leering over the magazine, just sitting there on a trunk.
Yeah. Now I don't get to do more than look. I get to touch. I get to feel. And you're like, oh, Christ. Would you please stop?
Like Bret Hart looking at his Peg Leg Pete magazines.
That's right. It needs a nickel. Okay, so next up, we have our WWE Tag Team title match. Now, you talked about a name change. Last time we saw these guys, JR, our champions, they were still Team Angle, but you mentioned their new names. And before we continue on their opponents, tell us why they changed their names.
On the June 12th SmackDown, Kurt Angle returned, confronted his proteges about their recent string of losses. They argued a bit. Angle officially fired them. And they said, fuck Team Angle, we're going to be the world's greatest tag team.
And they changed their tights. They were, of course, wearing Kurt's, red, white, and blue tights. Now they were in red and silver, as neither guy wore those colors in college. Although the red is similar to
it's more maroonish in a way.
Yeah, that's true.
New music. No more homages to Kurt.
No. Love the theme song. The theme song's awesome. Yeah, excellent. Their opponents are a fun little pair. And how did this pair get the title shot?
The Filthy Animals. On the 522 SmackDown, Rey Mysterio defeated Crash Holly and Shannon Moore to earn a Cruiserweight title match against Matt Hardy. He wrestled Hardy and won in the home state of California. And then Haas and Benjamin, when they recaptured the tag titles on the 7-3 SmackDown, Kidman and Mysterio began teaming on the 7-17 show, picked up a win over the Conquistadors. They would follow that win with a victory over Matt Hardy and Shannon Moore a week later to build some momentum for the title opportunity here. And as I mentioned, they were the Filthy Animals back in WCW.
That is correct. I don't think Kidman has fleas right now, though. And certainly Ray doesn't either. And because I didn't know where you were going. You vanished. I thought you were going to start doing your comments.
Well, you were kind of talking. I don't know what you wanted.
No,
to
I was like, oh, okay. Now he has an fleas. Look what you did, you little jerk. Okay, so Kidman doesn't have fleas anymore. Okay, go in your comments.
Okay, great match on paper.
Oh, unbelievable.
Team Angle, no more. New name, Filthy Animals reunited. I thought it was a good use for Kidman. Keeps him active. Cool new tights, like I mentioned. Quick start for the Filthy Animals. Quick tags. Instant chemistry with these four. And this match, again, is a perfect example of what SmackDown is and the perfect match for guys like Cole and Taz. Four young guys going out there, working at a really quick pace. A lot of psychology in the mix for them to talk about. I thought this was like the template match of, if you had to say, what was SmackDown like in 2003? This would be one of the matches I picked. Mm-hmm. World's Greatest Tag Team wrestled with intensity and fire. And it's great how you were able to use some power offense here because they blend it so well with their tag work. And having two guys, arguably smaller than them, I mean, Kidman's a little bit bigger, but Ray, that they could just toss around, looked great. We get a really good heat segment with Ray. Good arrogance oozing from the champs. The Animals come back with an aerial assault. Nice shooting star press to the floor by Kidman. Great double teams for the World's Greatest Tag Teams to work over Kidman's back. We get a great Ray hot tag and comeback. He's flying all over the place with some World's Greatest Tag Team cutoffs mixed in. Ray battles through it. We get some super near falls and a really strong finish for the champs. They put over clean and huge and establish a finisher. Tremendous match, nonstop action, very well built. And I thought this was a legit match of the year contender.
No doubt about it. I mean, it's... just as it's pretty close to what we to our opener, really.
I'd say as good. I mean, it was really fucking good.
Yeah, they were all over the place, and for such young guys, boy, did Shelton and Charlie know their shit or what? Mm-hmm. I mean, they for guys that are really young, if anybody really gained from their time in OVW, it was these two. I mean, they learned so much. They must have from osmosis just sucked everything out of that promotion in terms of work rate, in terms of psychology, how to carry matches within your heels. And Ray and Kidman were just two game challengers to bounce all over the place for. And I've always been a fan of Kidman, even though he has the most mismatched entrance theme of any wrestler ever. such a not theme for him. So, but it didn't matter. I mean, just the movements, just fluid motions, no wasted moves. Just an unbelievable match and a template for what was an incredible tag division on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
And just unbelievable talent. There's really not much more you could say. Just they float around and I kind of had a feeling even watching it. Well, I mean, obviously I knew the result when I was watching it today, but when I remember first watching it live, kind of knew that World's Greatest Tag Team were going to retain, but I was just curious to see how they were going to go about doing it and if they were going to cheat. And they didn't cheat a lot. Now that they weren't with Kurt anymore, I feel like they kind of broke out on their own and wanted to kind of earn their stripes as a tag team on their own. So it was just an amazing sequence just for the match was almost 15 minutes, just shy of 15 minutes, and they earned every second of it. And they retain their blue belts, the WWE tag team titles, in a fantastic match.
Yep. You look at this match and you would assume Haas and Benjamin are like mega stars coming out soon, like ready to break out. And that Kidman, like, oh man, after about a year of kind of good usage, but not great.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, this team with Ray could be awesome. And Ray, I mean, he's the Cruiserweight champ. Does he need to be? Put him in the tag division. Put him there. Let him, he could be a star later. This is, I mean, him and Kidman flying around the ring with these guys. Yeah. I would lift them as a team for at least another 6 months or so.
Mm. Where do you compare this match to the ladder match with Ray and with Eddie and Tajiri?
Oh, this match is better.
Mm. I think we had this conversation.
Yeah.
I feel like we had this conversation with other people sometime.
I like the ladder match with this match, and they do this one without gimmicks. I mean, this is just a straight up tag match. I think the better comparison is, where do you hold it with Edge and Ray versus Angle and Benoit?
Oh, from No Mercy 02. Yeah.
I think it's a step behind that, but not by much.
No, it's incredible. Already you can feel. I mean, we're three and a half matches, and if you want to count the brawl as half a match, that this pay per view is already head and shoulders better.
Oh,
than
yeah,
that.
It's already the rest could be nothing, and you already have just a fantastic, fantastic show.
Yeah, I mean, you've got two matches already that are borderline 4.5 stars out of 5, and some people may think 5. It depends on your point of view. All right, next up we have one third of the Trinity of Evil.
I just wanted to mention one thing quick.
Yes.
So Cole and Taz talk about the awesome crowd. We cut to them, and Cole calls his fans coal miners, which I thought was funny.
That is very funny, yes. and he'd go back to that 8 years later.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we have the first, like I said, of the Trinity of Control. That's what I call
odd team.
Yes, the Trinity of Control, the Big Show, Sable,
and with
me. Sable takes on Vince's daughter Stephanie in a count out cat fight. When I'm all grown up. It is a count out cat fight. That's what they call this match. No count out cat fight. And I thought it was kind of goofy too. We're talking about Sable here, JR. When was the last time she competed in an actual WWE match?
Wow. Sable's first pay-per-view match since defeating Tori at WrestleMania 15.
Wow, so we're talking over 4 years.
Since her debut, Sable had befriended Vince McMahon and began aiding him in his quest to take over SmackDown. Vince even appointed Sable as Stephanie's assistant, but the two would bicker and argue each week. On the 6/19 SmackDown, Vince used Sable to taunt Zach Gowen as she pretended to come on to him, only to end up mocking him alongside Vince. Later in the show, Steph ripped into Vince for using her all her life, even accusing Vince of whoring her out to associates in her late teens.
You will have sex with my daughter.
On the 7/10 SmackDown, Sable assaulted Steph in the ring and beat her down. The two ladies would brawl over the next 2 weeks, leading to their big showdown here. And Scott, a match with zero expectations coming in. More power struggle shit, just like our Raw, where we have Austin and Bischoff going at it. Here we got Vince and Steph. Steph's hair, not at its best. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Good fan reaction, though. Sable's super hot as she grinds her way to the ring. Confidently. Aggressive attack from both. Sable works over the ribs. Steph's bumping all around. I think she was Mr. Perfect or something. Steph tries to use a chair during her comeback, but the ref stops her. It's just like a straight-up brawl. You can really feel the anger. Steph even breaks out the Mr. Perfect neck snap, speaking of her current selling. I hadn't seen that in a while. Steph yanks off Sable's top. The ref covers her up. And then A-Train comes in, runs over Stephanie, and Sable steals the win. A lot of energy, and this was way better than it ever had any right to be. I like the Sable, A-Train, Big Show, Vince conglomerate. It was a weird one. And they had this kind of weird, they would go into this weird Sable, A-Train, sexual favor kind of thing from here. but I thought this match was good. It was a fun brawl, a lot of energy. They both went at it. I mean, say what you want about Sable. She knows what she's doing. She knows how to work a match a little bit. You know, I mean, she had some training, and she gets the business. I'll put it that way. I think she gets how to be a heel. Right. And Stephanie just bumped all around for her. So I thought it was pretty fun, surprisingly enough. I mean, for what it was, it really delivered.
Yeah. I mean, they were even their interactions on SmackDown were pretty stiff, too. Throwing each other into cars and stuff. I mean, it was they worked their butt off. I mean, this match is not as good as Steph and Trish at No Way Out of One. I mean, that might be the
Well, I mean, that had a way bigger story behind it.
Yeah, and that might be the peak of Stephanie's work rate. But yeah, I mean, it's just really good, just back and forth pounding, and they did the best they could with what they could work with. I guess from a divas match or women's match perspective, it's not bad. It's pretty good. And I liked Stephanie's role on SmackDown. I really did. I think she was a good pick for GM. We talked about that through most of the pay-per-views in 02. And, you know, having Vince on it, of course, adds to the organic feud. Yeah, there's really not much more to say. Really a solid match. Nothing. They didn't do too much to make it look ugly. They were perfectly fine. I was not surprised Stephanie lost because A-Train needed something to do. And it is a very odd combo. It's kind of what's a weirder trio? Sable, Big Show, and
me.
And me? No, Sable, Big Show, and A-Train, or Marlena, Mankind, and Goldust.
This one is that one that they were like the weirdos. This is just an odd power couple here. Yeah. Power trio.
Power trio.
Power square.
Like Rush. Power trio like Rush. So there you go. Sable gets the win, and the Master Puppeteer dangles his first fool on the stage.
I will maintain control.
Those are better than any. You'd have to look. He had one of the most epic feuds in the history of this business with Steve Austin, and none of those opens, except maybe the what would be the two good ones? I guess Over the Edge 98 with a dun 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 dun. Dun, you know that one?
Oh yeah,
that one's pretty awesome, and the St. Valentine's Day Massacre one with "Will You Be Mine?" the old music. That one's pretty good. But this one, maybe his best.
It's pretty hard. It's certainly up there.
But the Over the Edge 98, I think, is the template.
Dun, 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 control. Dun, dun, dun. Mr. McMahon. With the Gerald. Show. With Sable. With me. Hey.
So, there you go. Sable wins in a decent women's match. Okay. This.
I am the Dream Killer, the Reaper of Souls, the Master Puppeteer on the stage, you fools.
I wish he would be a puppeteer. Imagine if you have a party. Juliana's.
I picture it'd be like an old school puppeteer like that.
Third birthday coming up in 6 months or so, and you can, honey, I got a puppeteer for you.
These are my puppets.
Oh God, so funny. All right, this match, in my opinion, is the equivalent of Goldberg and Jericho at Bad Blood. The match, you're like, this isn't bad, but in the end, you're like, holy cow, where did this come from? And I find this match that level. How did we get here with these two guys?
We got here on the 626 SmackDown. John Cena defeated young newcomer Orlando Jordan. After the match, Undertaker came down and offered Jordan his respect, similar to what he had done to John Cena a year earlier. A week later, after giving some tips to Jordan backstage, just like the tips Vader's son gave him, Taker cost Cena his U.S. tournament match with Billy Gunn by distracting him. Following that, the match was added for the pay-per-view as Cena looked for revenge. On the 724 SmackDown, Cena cut a great rap promo against Taker while standing in a burning pentagram.
Where was that? Where is that John Cena now? pretty weird. That's kind of a cutting edge, huh?
You don't get enough you don't get enough pentagram promos nowadays.
No, not at all. Not at all. And rap promo he cuts here when he gets to the ring is pretty awesome.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Very cutting edge. I was asking the Silverback today, when Cena ends up turning face, he usually correlates the jerseys to whatever city they're in, you know, trying to kiss their butts. As a heel, though, I never felt he really had any, like, he didn't really wear, like, visiting, like, heel teams in cities. And in this instance, he comes to the ring in a Larry Bird Indiana State Sycamores jersey, which I thought was kind of weird for...
Yeah, I think he just used to bust out whatever.
Throw some kind of jersey on, yeah. Cool jersey, by the way.
Very cool. So, big spot for Cena, battling for respect. Cena tries to punch early, but Taker wins that battle. Taker works over the ribs with some tight strikes in and out of the ring. Crowd was a super, super into Taker here. Early on, Taker basically squashes Cena. And then the one part of this match I hated, and I really like the match, is when he picks him up for the pin.
You know, it's funny you say that, because when I caught that today, I went, God, I don't remember this.
Like, I was fine with Taker destroying him early. I just wish they didn't do that. That's like the one thing I didn't think they needed to do. Mm. Very similar to Taker and Angle at Fully Loaded 2000 to that point. I mean, if the match ended shortly after that, that's what it would have felt like. But they turn the tide because the domination from Taker finally ends when Cena yanks Taker into the exposed turnbuckle. Cena also works the ribs but can't put Taker away. Cena wriggles out of a dragon sleeper and hits a spinebuster for a near fall. Taker's mouth is busted and very, very bloody there. A strong fight feel throughout with them just slugging each other over and over, trying to find a small opening. Cena bashes Taker with a chain to the ribs, and then Cena had Taker on the ropes, hits the FU, but then gets caught in a last ride while kind of showboating in the corner and gets pinned. I thought it was a very fun match. I thought it established Cena as a real threat. I really just wish they didn't do the Taker pulling him up. I thought the rest was fine booking. Cena didn't really need the win. He just needed to look like he could hang, like he belonged. And I thought Taker selling at the end was great, exhausted, kind of hanging onto the ropes with his bloody mouth. Like, if they just didn't do that one thing, because we can believe that Taker would have beat him in like 6 minutes and Cena didn't belong. Like, that was the only thing. Even if they had Cena roll to the floor, anything, to show that he did it on his own volition and not Taker just pulling him up.
Yeah, because then now you have that doubt that the match didn't need.
Right.
And takes away from everything else. So, but wow, I was stunned at how much I liked this match again today.
Where do you put this for Taker's, since his renewed run?
Well, you mean renewed run, Judgment Day 2000 comeback, right? Renewed run, is that what you mean?
No, heel turn on.
Okay.
So whenever we talk about modern Taker from now on, we're talking Vengeance 01 on.
Okay. Well, it's not Brock in the Cell. That's probably his best match. Top three. I mean, there's really any other?
Triple H really. 17, Flair at 18. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's before this.
That's post Vengeance.
Right. Flair at 18.
Flair at 18 is very good. Not better than, I think. It's probably that one, those two, and then Brock at No Mercy 02.
RVD.
That match is okay. It was good. Not better than these, though. We liked Big Show at No Way Out, but that doesn't come close to these.
Yeah, that was good. Not this good.
But that doesn't come close to this, though. I think there's three best matches since December 01 is Brock at No Mercy 02, Flair at 18, and here.
And me.
Cena.
Do you think this established Cena more than the Brock match? Even though that was a title match?
Yes. I don't think he was taken as seriously. Because Brock doesn't have Taker's cred.
Yeah.
In that match, it's just, oh, Cena's this fluky. Because that Backlash show was a big... No one takes that show seriously much because it's pretty much Rock Goldberg and then a bunch of crappy undercard matches is pretty much. So I don't think people remember that match as much as they do this one in that early when they were cultivating Cena's character to get to the point eventually we get to. But here you're dealing with, you know, Taker, totally different realm than Brock. So just going 16 minutes with him sans the pull-up, which was kind of dumb. It just wasn't needed.
Yeah,
where did it fit? It didn't fit anywhere.
No, it didn't. It just, especially with Taker. If Cena wins, then you kind of get it. But Cena didn't even win, so Taker basically beat him twice. It was like, it was fine because Cena looked strong, but just that one part made it like, well, you're telling us Cena could hang, but then you kind of didn't because you kind of said they could have squashed him in like 5 minutes.
Right.
I mean, the rest was great. There were a lot of good drama, very stiff, hard-hitting. I thought Cena did well once he took over. He looked like he belonged. I thought it was great to get him going even more. And now you kind of see him becoming an upper mid-card guy more than over the last few outings. But that one thing just kind of bugged me.
Yeah. No, it wasn't needed. It kind of wrecked – it really wrecked the kind of the credibility – not wrecked it, but it kind of ruined the credibility of the match a bit. But it did recover in the end. Cena really worked his tail off to keep up. Taker looked great. It was one of the first times that he really looked trim. He didn't look paunchy at all. You know
what a difference 3 years makes with the angle match.
Yeah, no kidding. I know that one. Survivor Series 2000.
No, the Fully Loaded 2000.
Oh, Fully Loaded 2000. That's even worse.
Right, where just I mean, same kind of match, right?
Yeah, and except young he squats a guy.
Yeah, and he just destroys.
But in that one, he looks fat and old, not like this one.
I shouldn't say same. Similar kind of match. Similar kind of setting. A young situation. Guy, up and coming. Yeah. Kind of Taker's the gatekeeper, and he makes Cena looks like a star here. He just wrecked Angle at that one.
Yeah, and it took a great character like Angle to recover himself.
Right. Do you think Cena could have recovered if he had that same match?
At the time, no. No. I don't think so. I don't know if he was as bombastic and as established a character as Kurt was at that point. Even with having a bigger window than Cena had, than Angle had, because Kurt only started that in November, whereas Cena's been there almost over a year. So, yeah, I don't know if he would have recovered from it. I don't know. I don't think so. Interesting question to ask the nation. Maybe after we post this, maybe they can make their comments. I don't know if he would have recovered from it. Angle was just different. I mean, even at that point, he had already won titles. Cena really won nothing yet. He just wore cool throwbacks and had a mean rap. He knew how to, cut the decent promo, but he didn't have
the fire.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the word freestyle. That's the word I'm thinking of. He knew how to freestyle, but
these kids and their words.
Yeah, God, what are they rapping or something?
I'm gonna freestyle all over you, Chris Golo.
Hey, what are you doing here?
I know you like to mix things up.
This isn't your show.
It's Freestyle Friday here.
It's not even Friday. I know you
prefer Monotony Monday. Missionary Mondays.
Did you mean Monogamy Monday? Angle had already won belts by that point. He had already been credible. Cena hadn't won squat yet, so I think it would have hurt him a little bit more. Anyway, it's still a great match. Taker does win, but I think Cena does gain some cred from the crowd. And the crowd was kind of into him for most of this match, too. So nobody gets hurt here except for that cheesy, kick up or pull up by Taker. But in the end, fortunately, it didn't ruin the match.
Yeah, you prefer a standing up Sunday.
Why don't we take a break here on the Blaze B podcast? We have two matches left. We've got the Charity Gimp and me. And then, of course, we have our WWE Championship match as well. But first, a word of many, because
about Monday,
you'll be hitting the floor.
And me!
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, we'll be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling, we talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
This
This is legendary ring announcer and WWE Hall of Famer, the Think Howard Finkel. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, so Nation, we are back. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Big interview, big podcast just dropped, Scott, as we're recording this. Mm-hmm. Titans of Wrestling, episode number 36. Mm-hmm. Parv and Pete interview the legendary Tito Santana.
Uh-oh.
Talk about his early career in Florida, Georgia, WWF, and AWA, his legendary feud with Greg Valentine over the Intercontinental title. You can head over to Tito's website, TitoSantana.net, to learn more about him. Follow him at Real Tito Santana, and follow the Titans at Titans O Wrestling. And check out that interview. I'm sure it's going to be a great one.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys know their old school wrestling, and Tito is an old school star.
Yes, he is.
Speaking of old school stars, Andrew Reich, starting off his NBA written previews with the Southeast Division. We're going to have one of those every day this week. And the podcast previews continue with our NBA team. That's Reich and Adam Murray as well.
Yep. Fantastic show.
The written Pacific and podcast Pacific will be up tomorrow. So that'll be you can read and listen to about how your Lakers are going to suck, Scott.
Yeah, they probably will.
Yeah. At least Reich thinks so. Yes. Cowboy goes to class. He went to class to talk about No Mercy 2008, Scott, a show that we had reviewed recently in our written reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Shawn Michaels versus Chris Jericho in a ladder match. You can read Roger Morissette, first time he'd ever seen that one. Also, check out in lieu, as some idiots may say, of the Vintage Vault previewing for this show. Chad had recently watched a show earlier this year with Roger for Cowboy Goes to Class on Vengeance 03, so you can check out their thoughts as well under the Cowboy Goes to Class heading at the top of the page. New episode of The Extra Point, NFL Week 7, World Series preview. You had your brother, Kyle Forchetti, Dr. G, all on.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you guys were a little harsh on Percy Harvin. I think he's good. That was an okay trade. Speaking of Percy Harvin, the Bauer Show also analyzed that trade. New House of Horror, Jeremy Nichols looking at Halloween H2O 20 years. I mean, I've never seen the movie and I don't really care for that shit, but
it's good.
I remember when that came out. Like, I can't believe it's already been 20 years since that came out.
I know. It was fantastic. It's a good movie.
We rebumped a classic piece from Brad and Chad, one of my favorite pieces, where they count down the 10 best Halloween Havoc matches.
Mm-hmm.
So it fits in with our Halloween theme. A new episode of The Bauer Show as well, like I mentioned, still Real Toast podcast, 22 Weeks podcast, and the Seinfeld rewatch, Scott. Another classic episode here in Season 3. We looked at the parking garage, and another big one coming up tomorrow, and that is The Cafe, of course, the debut of Babu Bhatt with the Dream Cafe. So be sure to check that out each and every Tuesday and Friday. Haven't missed one yet. Knock on wood. Sellers Points, Russell Sellers looked at the DC Cinematic Universe. Is it alive? I don't know. Russell talks about it. New episode of TJ and Todd's Tailgate as well last weekend. Episode 20 of The Main Event, Scott. Mm-hmm. Great episode. It was you, Duncan, Reich, Willie, and CRZ.
Yeah, your boy.
Yes, very good episode. Previewed Hell in a Cell. Played a little game. We talked about your favorites in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I really enjoyed CRZ in that episode. I thought he fit right in.
Yeah, he was
you
very
guys.
Good. No, he was fantastic.
You know, as much as we all miss Ben Morse, it was great to hear CRZ there. Adventure Vault Refresh Series continues, Scott, with WrestleMania 4. Of course, we're going back in time, running through all those each and every Thursday at PlaceNation.com. We had a new episode of the Sports Lounge. You talked about your Cowboys. You talked about the shitty Steelers. And speaking of, that continues here tonight as they're losing to Houston at home on Monday night. And as I mentioned as well, the Kevin Kelly Show, episode 20, featuring Kyle O'Reilly. Another great interview from Kevin. We talked about Mike and Maria's wedding. Talked about O'Reilly. Talked about his belief in the supernatural.
Really?
UFOs, Sasquatches, and the like. So it's a very interesting episode there. And Kevin and I stole our gimmick, Scott. Remember, back in the day, we drafted our own networks. Kevin and I redid that. We did 10 picks each.
Oh, okay.
So you can check that out. And yes, finally, new episode of the Pro Wrestling Super Show, Stephen Graham. Had on Ben Morse, Jordan, and Reich. And if you remember, back in the day, they did a draft where they drafted a current-day wrestling world, and they went ahead and booked that talent. This is part two of that series. Finally, I want to mention as well, Andrew Waltman attended Late Night with Seth Meyers and talked about his experience. So, PlaceToBeNation.com, check it out. PlaceToBeNation.com. At Facebook and Twitter, Place Number 2 B Nation as well. Info, placenumbernation.com if you want to get in touch with us. If you're interested in writing or have any suggestions for any of our written pieces or shows, we have plenty more coming. Another big tournament on the way. Of course,
can't wait.
Homer Simpson was crowned greatest TV character of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And this new tournament should be a lot of fun as well. So check that out each and every day of your life.
Mm. On a side note, JR. You talked about Homer. I cannot believe that this past Sunday was the 25th Treehouse of Horrors.
Wow.
25 of them. That's amazing.
Speaking of Homers, listen to The Extra Point with Chris Criscolo.
I dug into his Giants pretty good. He deserved it.
He was good. I'm not sure. I enjoyed him.
Oh, thank you.
It's good
yeah,
to have someone that knows what they're talking about.
So let us dive back into Denver, into Vengeance 2003.
Yes.
Wait, what is that? What did that mean?
What?
That's somebody I don't know what they were talking about. As compared to who? Never mind. Okay. Let us go
someone
into
that knows what they're doing.
Okay. Next up is the match with which this whole show is almost based around. It's kind of sad.
And me.
Mr. McMahon tried to do a nice thing and then took advantage of it. What is the background here?
On the June 26th edition of SmackDown, McMahon told Zach Gowen that if he joined his Kiss My Ass Club, he'd be awarded a WWE contract. Instead, Gowen hit McMahon with a low blow. On July 3rd, to win his contract, Gowen, along with Stephanie McMahon, faced off with the Big Show in a handicap match. And, of course, Mr. McMahon mocked Zach's amputated leg and billed this as the first real handicap match in wrestling history. With help from Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, Gowen and McMahon won the match, defeated Big Show, and Zach was given a contract. McMahon was furious, said Gowen's first official match would be against him at the show. We talked about Zach at Judgment Day. Of course, he was portrayed as a fan, mm-hmm. won this contract. Vince was torturing him. He had had cancer as a child, had part of his leg amputated. Walked around with a prosthetic, but wrestles on one leg. And amazing stuff that he does. And mm-hmm. if you want more about Zach's life, we interviewed him on episode, I think it was 6 of the Kevin Kelly Show back in the day, mm-hmm. Earlier this year. And he had a great, great interview that he provided Kevin. Let me just get the exact number of that one.
Oh, I was
yeah, it's episode 6.
Too.
Yep, it was Zach Gowen and Ashley 6, two guys that have had quite the battle in their lives, but becoming stars in the wrestling world. Zach, I thought, was great as the sympathetic face here. I thought he was perfect with Vince. I thought Vince was a real piece of shit, but I thought it worked well. I thought he's a perfect foil. They told Zach's story very well with all their video packages and you know history about what he went through. I thought they did a really good job. I thought the SmackDown match where Zach earned his contract had amazing heat. I don't know if you remember that match. Mm-hmm. I had a DVR on my computer. Before DVR was kind of the rage, mm-hmm. and I used to record SmackDown every week because I worked overnights and I'd watch it during the day. Mm-hmm. And I watched that match over and over. Like, I always rewatch it because the heat was just absurd.
Right, it was.
Brock comes out, Kurt comes out, and just the place is going nuts, and Zach gets the mm-hmm. win. Really well done. I thought Zach is an amazing athlete working on one leg. Gets a very strong push here, being associated with Brock, programmed with Vince. And I thought it was interesting because Vince usually only has big-time matches. You know, right. Like, when's the last time he had a match that wasn't, like, a huge name or a big story? Like, this is a pretty big deal for Zach.
Huge. Big deal for Zach. And I think Vince wanted to...
I mean, who has Vince fought? You know, Austin, Rock, Triple H,
Hogan,
Shane, Hogan, Flair... Like, he hasn't had a match with a guy on this level.
No, no. And I think he was kind of happy to take on somebody that was kind of chucked around. And yeah, I think it was an opportunity for Vince to kind of show off. And he looked ridiculously jacked
Oh,
here.
God, so juiced.
Yeah, he was gassed.
And I thought that was a great part of it. I thought the dichotomy and the look was awesome. You had this little, you know, wiry guy with one leg. And this jacked up, tan, grayed, you know, hoss human being going up against it. The crowd is pumped for this one. And I mean, it felt like a big time atmosphere when Zach pulls his leg off and the crowd is like buzzing and they go face to face. Like, it felt like a big deal. Like, oh my God. Like, it just looked so, it was just so crazy. Mm. Vince kept Zach grounded early, wrestling arrogantly. I thought Vince had some awesome lines in the build and or the matching. He's going to do what cancer couldn't do, kill Zach. after Vince's assault, Zach takes to the air with some pretty impressive moves, including an acai moonsault. Vince takes over, works his good leg, only leg. Match really puts over Zach's guts. true.
It's kind of hard to say that with a straight face.
Vince punishes the leg, including a half crab that he really wrenches in. Although Zach got a good shine during his comeback, lots of offense, and Vince only gets saved by putting his foot on the ropes. And then we get the spot. Mm-hmm. So Vince has a chair, mm-hmm. and Zach kind of rattles him. And then randomly, Vince like falls to a knee, which kind of looked really awkward. Mm. And Zach comes in with a drop kick. Drop kicks the chair into Vince's head. And I don't know if it's a blade or if it's legit. It was gnarly as hell. I mean, just a gusher. And like, yeah. As soon as it clangs off his head, you just see the blood stream out of a hole, just a hole in his temple. Not like a slice across his head, like a hole.
Yeah.
It
looked like a water fountain.
Just pouring onto the mat.
Yeah.
Zach lays in a sick chair shot to the back, but then misses a moonsault, and Vince just covers him for the win. I mean, I know they wanted to go further with this, but I don't get why Zach didn't win here. And the only thing I can think of is that they wanted to reestablish Vince for a future feud that was coming, and losing to Zach wasn't going to work. But I thought they had an excuse with Zach just busting him open with the chair. I mean, he could have easily won. The end just felt a little anticlimactic. Vince's blood was nuts, and this match, again, like the women's match, way better than it had any right to be, with zero interference. I mean, this was just these two guys wrestling a brawl. A strong stunt-style match. And again, the blood, it felt real to me because it comes so late in the match. Like, why would he blade like that for the last move, you know? It looked like more than a blade job. I don't know.
Well, it seemed like the chair, the part of the back part of the chair near, like, the pipe part, like, to the side is what hit Vince in the face. So it might have been a screw, or it might have been just a sharp piece of the chair. I can't see Vince blading that badly. For somebody who's not even a real wrestler, anybody knows that
that's what makes me think maybe it was, because the fact that it was such a shitty blade job, but Vince has bled before.
Yeah.
I mean, at 19, he did it. Yeah. It just happened so fast. It looked legit to me. Like, the way the chair bangs and automatically starts pouring out of his head. Mm. I don't know. It was gross either way. I mean, just a pile of blood on the mat.
Yeah. Incidentally, you talked about the awesome, match on SmackDown. Do you remember where that was?
No.
Rochester.
Hot crowd. That was a big night.
So upstate New York, figure it was probably a hot crowd anyway. So yep, it's from the Blue Cross Arena, courtesy of Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com.
Check out his book coming soon.
That's right.
You should follow him on Twitter during Raw, by the way. He gives away copies.
Oh, he's just fun to listen to read during Raw on top of it.
So. Donna Reed.
Donna Reed. So there you go. Mr. McMahon wins. Matches. I'm a little shocked at the length. I didn't think they would go 14 minutes. I thought that'd be a little long, but it wasn't bad, though.
It was fun. I mean, it's one of my favorite Vince matches, and I love all Vince matches, but
yeah.
I really dug this one. The blood was great. The fighting was great. I thought the story was really good. I thought Zach was fantastic in this angle, in this role. I thought at the time, people were getting really anti-Vince, and he had come off the thing with Bob Costas and all the shit that I think people took it really seriously. Like, they thought Vince was really being a dick. But in retrospect, man, it's such a good feud, and he's such an asshole.
He really is an asshole.
It's just like the stuff he says.
Yeah.
Just insane.
Yeah. I mean, this goes beyond any heel stuff he did with Steve or anybody. I mean, this is rough. Making fun of a guy with one leg. I'm going to do to you what cancer didn't. Who says that? This is fucking sick.
Yeah.
So, all right. So there you go. Mr. McMahon wins. And
again, he's got big things coming. Not even just a match-wise, but even alliance-wise. So, I mean, I get why he couldn't lose to Zach. And this doesn't... I mean, Zach is Zach. So it's not like him beating Vince was going to, like, propel him to superstardom. Just doing what he did on one leg is good enough. So I just wanted to bother me too much. It was more that it was so like Zach dismisses a moonsault, Vince lays on him and pins him while he's gushing blood. Felt a little bit weird. A
lot of blood. I mean, it was gross. It was gross. All right. We are now up to our main event. the WWE Championship on the line. And it is your champion, Brock Lesnar, who has held it since WrestleMania, of course, taking on The Big Show, who, of course, he defeated in the stretcher match back at Judgment Day. And a third guy in this match who has made a return, a surprising return, JR. We mentioned it earlier in pertaining to another match. It kind of reminds me of something we usually do on this show. Oh, well. Tell us about the return, JR.
Yes! 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 My man, Kurt Angle, made his return to TV on the 6-5 SmackDown. Upon the original diagnosis of his injury, it's rumored that Kurt Angle would be out of action for up to a year, or possibly even forced to retire because he would need spinal fusion surgery. Instead, being the crazy bastard that he is, Angle opted for a different, more aggressive surgery that would shorten his rehab time. Angle came through the surgery just fine, worked his ass off training, and amazingly enough, was really ready for a return just under 3 months. Upon his return, Kurt got an enormous pop from the fans, and it was evidence that he was returning as a face. Big Show interrupted Angle's speech, but after some playful jabs from Kurt, the champion showed up on the scene as well. Brock offered Angle a title match, and Kurt accepted. Kurt also put over the WrestleMania match and thanked Brock for his support and friendship during Kurt's recovery time. A week later, Brock put his title on the line against the Big Show. 8 minutes into the match, Brock superplexed Show, and in an iconic SmackDown moment, the ring collapsed, leading to a no contest. A week later, Show got his rematch, but the bout ended in a DQ when Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin ran in and attacked Lesnar. Angle made the save and cleaned house, but he got wiped out by a Show chokeslam. 2 weeks later, Angle and Lesnar helped Zach Gowen earn his contract when they interfered in the match and wiped out Big Show. The next week, Angle had a funny battle rap with John Cena that ended with Show attacking him. Angle confronted Lesnar later in the night, angry that Brock didn't help him while Show was beating him down. And later that night, Lesnar was pinned by Big Show in a handicap match after Show put Brock through a table with a chokeslam. Show would also pick up a win over Angle 2 weeks later with some miscommunication with Brock led to a pinfall. While the build-up for this match was basic, many people didn't care for the bizarre mutual admiration between Lesnar and Angle. They thought it made Brock look like a weak pussy instead of the dominant monster he had been bred to portray. Did you feel that way at the time, Scott?
No, not really.
Really?
Yeah, I was kind of puzzled.
I thought it made him seem goofy.
I was puzzled. I think his face run since Mania has been pretty bad anyway.
It's very tepid.
Yeah, I don't think Brock had anything to do with
it. I think part of it too is that he hasn't had that strong challenge.
Let's put it this way. Do you compare it to Warrior?
Yeah, I think you could.
Mm. You know? I was kind of puzzled as to like why Angle would come back as a babyface. I thought that was kind of strange. Well, maybe they had plans in mind for the characters on the show. And maybe that's why the bookers wanted Angle to get back into the fans' good graces for some reason. I don't know. I don't think it helped Brock's cause, but I think that ship had passed anyway.
I just remember it being ridiculed at the time online, like them pictures of them looking like they were gonna make out, like them on a boat. You know what I mean? Like it was like kind of all these goofy photoshops of them, this like weird like we're best friends now kind of thing, and it just felt weird for these two guys that had feuded so much. Short lived, but
yeah. So here we go. Usually triple threats. You know, depending on who the people are. I mean, 1 year ago at this pay-per-view, we had a fantastic triple threat match involving one of the guys on this show, on this match, Kurt Angle, and of course, The Rock and The Undertaker. And that triple threat is tremendous. This one's really good, too.
And yeah, Big Show still lingering in that main event picture.
Yeah.
And I think it's fitting, though, because if you look on paper, it feels like he's been kind of shoehorned into this.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it, he's really been feuding with these guys since the fall. I mean, he started feuding with Brock right after October, after No Mercy. And they've been training title matches on and off and feuding since then, really. So I thought it fit that Show was still involved here. Lesnar really needed some spice into this run. I thought Angle finally got him up and going. Even if they were being kind of wishy-washy with it, there was still that natural rivalry over who's better. And it was believable that they were really dead even. So I thought that at least kind of breathed some life into Brock, who had been stale. I mean, not that Big Show wasn't good in that feud. It just felt from the Cena match to the Big Show match, and then he kind of just meandering around a bit. Now it felt like, okay, we got some juice back in this title reign. Big Show was dominant early, working over both men, almost steals a win with a chokeslam on Brock. I thought Kurt looked great. The crowd was really into him. They used weapons to bust down Big Show, slow him down a bit, but Show kept looking strong. He swatted off both guys at once. Brock and Kurt would team up and try and take out Big Show. Brock hits an F5 on Show, which is always impressive. Angle bleeds, which I thought felt a little out of place, especially after the Vince gusher. I didn't think they really needed blood in this one. It felt like Angle was so happy to be back that he bled for fun. And I thought he had enough heat if they worked his neck. Like, they didn't need the blood.
Right.
A sweet running powerbomb out of the corner by Brock onto Big Show. Kurt uses a chair on Brock to bust up a pin attempt. Angle gives an angle slam on Brock through the announce table. Big Show on the announce table puts him out for a bit. Brock is bloody as well and woozy from a gnarly Kurt chair shot to the face into the head earlier. Brock and Kurt, it was stiff. That was a really, really rough one to watch.
Yeah.
Brock and Kurt go one-on-one with a lot of anticipation. Delay in the feud continuing after Mania, I thought, helped keep it hot a bit. It kind of is like refreshed now that they had that time off. Lots of big moves back and forth, only slowed down when Brock went to the rare choke. Big Show comes back, hits a double choke slam on both guys. Taz's use of the term yambag will never not make me laugh.
Yambag. He says it like 8 times on this night.
Got him in the yambag.
In the yambag.
Brock hits the post on a charge, gets dragged into an ankle lock, and then you get a shot. I thought it was a shocking finish with Kurt pinning Brock clean with the angle slam. Kurt gets his win back. The rivalry will still rage on from here, though. Are you surprised for a couple reasons? Are you surprised that Big Show didn't eat the pin? And are you shocked that Brock lost the belt in this match?
Yes. I was shocked at both. Very much so. Maybe that's what made the match better than it probably should have been. The Big Show was left unharmed here. Maybe because he had already, you know, laid down for Brock at Judgment Day. And he laid down for Kurt back at Armageddon. Maybe it was, you know.
I think they wanted to give Angle his win back over Brock. And it just felt a little weird. It almost made Brock feel, it's like, oh, Angle's back, he's champion again. Like, it almost felt like Hogan coming back and gets his belt right back. You know, it, I don't say it cheapened Brock, but it felt, I don't know, it felt a little weird.
It felt very weird. That was I wasn't expecting that ending. I was definitely expecting Show to eat that pin. Absolutely. But didn't happen. And Kurt Angle regains the WWE Championship.
Yeah, red hot
very,
match.
Very good match.
Right, red hot. Well worked. The crowd was hooked in the whole way. And again, great commentary throughout the show as well as all during the match. I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed the whole show. I thought SmackDown smoked Raw in their debut, in their first outing. The crowd was super, super hot. Great commentary. The card over-delivered in all spots. I mean, the Billy Gunn match was the only down spot. And even that wasn't. I mean, they were short. And the storyline was kind of funky. The barroom brawl was fun for what it was. And those matches combined were under 10 minutes.
Right.
On a, you know, 7-match card with 2 legit Match of the Year candidates, 1 great main event, a great brawl, a solid women's match. Like, there was nothing, and Cena Taker, which is almost, could have been Match of the Night on probably was a Match of the Night on Bad Blood if it was over there. It's like the 4th best match on this show, which is crazy. So an easy thumbs up by me. I would put this in the check mark column for SmackDown.
Big time. I don't think there's any question that this show blows Bad Blood away. Big time. Big time. So, Kurt Angle, your new WWE champion, highlights the show, but new U.S. champion Eddie Guerrero, world's greatest tag team, retains their tag straps, and we have 4 matches on this show that are minimum 3.5 stars out of 5. And at least a couple of them are 4.5.
Yep, great show. I mean, it really was. It was a lot of fun to relive. Always has been one of my favorite shows. And we'll talk about the negative impact that had a couple of months later. But Claire and I remember we watched this show live, and we were in love with it immediately. And I think SmackDown in 03, we could take a minute to talk about this here, Scott. I think SmackDown in 03 gets this weird negative rep. I think people remember like the Piper and Hogan stuff.
Yep.
And I think they miss the SmackDown 6 so much that they think because in 03 Raw was very bland, I think SmackDown gets overlooked for how hot it was.
Yeah.
How great the crowds were, the commentary, some of the stories. The Zach stuff was really good. They had great work rate, a great mid. Like, I think it just gets forgotten how good SmackDown continued to be throughout 2003.
I don't think there's any doubt. It was a better roster. I hate to say it. I mean, you have guys that are just unbelievable workers. I mean, Angle, Benoit, Eddie, Ray, Kidman, World's Greatest Tag Team, Brock. I mean, you've got a legit roster of studs on this show, on this brand. Better than anything. I mean, who are the best workers on Raw? Jericho and Shawn. Triple H has taken a hit from being injured.
I mean, Booker.
Kevin Nash is. I mean, Booker's pretty solid. But I hate to say it. I wouldn't put Booker in the class of the guys on SmackDown.
No, definitely not.
You know, I mean Steiner and fucking Test and
no, it's not, I mean Nash, no, it's not even close.
It's not even close. It really isn't.
I mean the best. If you take Shawn and Flair out, the third best Raw guys for like the 15th best would be the 15th best on SmackDown.
Yeah. No, I don't know why people would shit on SmackDown that year. I think it's.
I think it's just for overlooked.
Overlooked. Yes, that I agree with. Yeah, you're right. Overlooked. That's a better word, better terminology. Lord only knows why, you know. Why would you forget?
Well, like I said, I think you tend to look at 03 was a down year. Like I said, you remember the Piper and Mr. America stuff. That was a bit goofy.
Sean O'Hare and
maybe think a Big Show being in the main event picture, even though he was actually pretty good. And I think you could argue 03 is his best WWE year so far
to this point. Yeah, in terms of use, yeah,
not even use, just match wise.
Yeah, I mean, it even goes back to like late 02 when he wins the title at Survivor Series.
And right.
Just his presence on camera has been pretty good. And he had we talked about it. He had a couple good matches with Brock. He had a good match with Taker and No Way Out. I mean, he really hasn't had a bad year in that aspect. Better than the last couple of years where he's either been on the fat farm or in garbage, low mid-card junk.
Right.
Definitely big for him. So, yeah, it's really a shame. For those that have not seen this show or it's been a long time, go to the network and pop it on. I mean, it's a really, really good show. And I think a lot of people remember, I don't even think people remember the triple threat. I think the only match people really remember from the show is Benoit and Eddie. I think the rest of the show people may not remember this was a great triple threat. And, you know, Taker Cena is really good. And obviously the tag match is really good. And I think the rest of that card is forgotten. I think people remember Eddie Benoit is like, wow, that was an awesome match. And yeah, the rest is okay. No, the rest is more than just okay. It's fantastic. So we highly recommend when you have some time to kill, hop on the network and throw it on. It's a fantastic show. It really is.
Agreed. All right, Scott, that will do it from Vengeance here. So we'll be back Wednesday night with our Halloween special, our fourth.
Yes.
Fourth Halloween special. Amazing.
Yeah.
We'll be back here. We'll have some interesting tricking and treating planned for you. WWE Network Live Watch Monday Nitro, our second installment there. We'll have Willie, Glenn, and Duncan back. I mean, yes, Willie, Glenn, and Duncan.
Yep.
That'll be Monday night, the 9:18 and 9:25, 95 Nitros.
Mm-hmm.
Episodes 21 of Kevin Kelly Show, a main event. I'm sure you guys will be recapping Hell in a Cell for that.
Yes, we'll be. Yep, the Core Four will be back. We'll recap Hell in a Cell, amongst other things.
It'll be our Halloween Kevin Kelly Show. We have a very special guest we'll announce next week, Halloween related. So that'll be a lot of fun. SummerSlam 03 the week after that, and our Raw Live Watch as well, 4/12 and 4/19. So those are the next few weeks here at the PTB. As always, visit PlaceToBeNation.com. Remember to check out Titans of Wrestling interview with Tito Santana. It's front and center on the main page. Check out Chris Lee Knows Betna. Check out all that we have to offer here at PlaceToBeNation. We thank you for your support. So with that said, Scott, we're out. We'll talk Wednesday night, Halloween.
You know, you played those sound bits. Weren't we supposed to do something this summer? Something?
So if you come as Night of the Year,
uh-huh.
Wednesday, can you be Dennis Knight?
Bobby
Knight?
Well,
Knight Rider?
Knight Rider. You want me to come as a car?
Yes.
I could wear a red Adidas sweater and throw a chair across the room.
Yeah, that could work. I kind of like the Dennis Knight.
All right, well, then I'll dress as... Was he Shanghai Pierce?
Just don't do Naked Midian.
No, absolutely not. Rotella was going to put a shirt
that was that party last year.
What about Jimmy Valiant? What you gonna do now? Whatever I wanna do, gosh, it's cool now. Now I'm gonna do, it's new now. Then you motherfucker really, really need to cool out. Cause you'll never get on top of this. So mommy, best advice is just to get on top of this. Have you ever had sex with a pharaoh? I put the pussy in a sarcophagus. Now she claiming that I bruise her esophagus. Head of the class and she just want a scholarship. I'm living in the future, so the present is my past. My presence is a present, kiss my ass. Gossip, gossip, nigga, just stop it. Everybody know I'm a motherfucking monster. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. Profit, profit, nigga, I get it. Everybody know I'm a motherfucking monster. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. I'ma need to see your fucking hands. Sasquatch, Godzilla, King Kong, Loch Ness, Goblin, Ghoul, a zombie with no conscience. Question, what do these things all have in common? Everybody knows I'm a motherfucking monster. Conquer, stomp you, stop your silly nonsense. Nonsense, none of you niggas know where the swamp is. None of you niggas have seen the carnage that I've seen. I still hear things scream in my dreams. Murder, murder in black convertibles. I kill a block, I murder the avenues. I rape and pillage your village, women and children. Everybody wanna know what my Achilles heel is. Love, I don't get enough of it. All I get is these vampires and bloodsuckers. All I see is these niggas I made millionaires, milling about, spilling their feelings in the air. All I see is these fake fucks with no fangs, trying to draw blood from my ice cold veins. I smell a massacre, seems to be the only way to back you back. Gossip, gossip, nigga, just stop it. Everybody know I'm a motherfucking monster. I'ma need to see your fucking hands.